Well, you've heard this advice before. Find a quiet place to study and stick with it at the same time every day. Good habits, right? But thanks to brain imaging and advances in neuroscience, we've learned a lot about learning over the last few years. And it turns out that that quiet little corner of the library may not be the best place for you to retain and store information, and that we may learn best by forgetting. Benedict Carey is a science reporter for our partner, The New York Times. In researching his new book, How We Learn, The Surprising Truths About When, Where, and Why It Happens, Carey discovered that we learn best when we exploit the quirks built into our brains through evolution.
Our ideas about how the brain works are fairly recent ones. There are recent constructs that come from education, that it works in concentrated blocks, in classrooms, by doing homework, by doing practice, and so on. Using that language blinds us to the way the brain essentially learned to learn, which is over the sort of course of evolution, human evolution, it learned by foraging and scavenging in the same way that we foraged for food and for shelter. And so that's a very different kind of learning than the one we think about when we say the word learning. When you see that big picture, you begin to appreciate all these quirky things the brain does.
One of the things I took from your book here, and I might be overstating it, is kind of a polemic against rote memorization, sort of spelling bee, times tables, ruler-based learning that maybe is a thing of the past now, but for a lot of kids and a lot of adults, not so much.
That's right. It has a polemical quality, absolutely. I mean, the reason I wrote this, I thought, I mean, this is crazy. I mean, we're really taught to study and practice like monks, isolate the material from our lives to, find one quiet space, to have a ritual, to stay with that ritual, to avoid distractions. And to the extent that we fail that, we feel we've failed. We haven't done it right. This is why I wrote this. I thought, I mean, this is crazy. We're following all this advice and feeling bad when we don't kind of live up to this ideal, and the ideal's wrong. And so that needs to change.
You say that forgetting is a good thing.
That's
for
right.
Instance.
Forgetting is a sort of has multiple properties. And when you look at it, it's kind of amazing to see what it does. It's, we think of it as the enemy of learning. What the learning science is showing is that, in fact, it's the strongest ally of learning. And it does a couple things. One is it acts as a very sophisticated spam filter. So if you're looking for a fact or a name or a figure or a formula or something like that, it's in your brain. But it's linked to thousands of other things that are similar. So you need to be able to filter those things out to select out like that kind of needle in a haystack that you're looking for. And it's suppressing the memory of the other things, that is, actively filtering or forgetting them, that allows you to make the selection. Forgetting is a little bit like muscle breakdown. So a little bit of forgetting, you hear something, you study something. A day later, you don't remember it quite as well. When you restudy, it strengthens that memory times 10 because the breakdown has allowed you to strengthen the memory even more, as like muscle breakdown does when you work out.
What's more important, do you think, in ultimately learning about recall, having access to the information? Is it storage or being able to access a memory? I find so often, we've all had this feeling, it's not that you don't know something, it's that you go, and then when you remember it or somebody reminds you, you knew it was in there, but you couldn't find the path to it.
Exactly. You're talking about storage strength and retrieval strength as two ideas in the theory of cognitive science. And that theory says if you store it, it's there forever. It's retrieval that's hard. Okay, retrieval is a much more fickle thing. It's finite. It doesn't contain as much. And that is the set of things that you have available to you at any given time. And so learning is really a way of trying to work with the retrieval side and to train it to be able to pick up what you want when you want it.
Well, you knew this part was coming, Benedict Carey, but it's time for a little bit of advice. What can we do? What does the science say about what I can do to improve my learning capability and this faltering memory system that I have? What does the science say? What have you compiled about what I can really do in my everyday life?
Absolutely. There's a half a dozen things you can do right now. One of them is to vary the places where you study or practice. Simple, vary location. Change the rooms, inside, outside, go to a cafe. I was a very restless college student, and I did all of that stuff. I was up and down all the time. I still am. That cognitive scientists have shown that that kind of variability increases the number of cues related with the, you know, information you're learning, and also makes it independent of any particular one spot. So you don't need to go back to your, you know, you don't need to go back to your basement study room to remember the stuff you're studying. You're carrying it with you. Another thing you can do is you can play with your schedule, that is your study schedule, very simply by breaking up the amount of study time you have. So instead of doing it all on Tuesday night, you do 1 hour on Tuesday, one on Wednesday, or one on Thursday, and wait a week. That simple variation, that simple distribution of the time can double what you remember.
You didn't mention one thing, and I want to ask about it. Yep. How strong is the science on the effect of sleep directly on learning and recall? I've heard a lot of different things. Yeah. I'm a guy who does not sleep enough.
Right.
I never have because I'm a night owl and that's how I'm wired. Does it make me dumber?
Does it make you dumber? I don't know. I suspect you should get to more sleep. That's what I'd say,
sure.
Todd. But this is a very contentious area, okay? But the preponderance of the evidence right now says this. The big picture is sleep is learning. It's a special kind of learning. It's learning consolidation. Okay, so when you go to sleep after you've studied or practiced something, your brain is actively sorting, picking out the most meaningful stuff.
Reformatting that hard drive.
Reformatting, that's right, and flagging the most important things. Sleep finishes the job of learning. That is, that theory is pretty well established now. There is a lot of debate over other parts of sleep and learning. But the evidence right now suggests the following thing, which is very interesting, that the first half of the night is retention territory. That's when deep sleep occurs, and that's when your brain consolidates, is more specialized to consolidate facts, figures, faces, and so on. The second half of the night is loaded with a different kind of processing that is more specialized to motor skills, like music and athletics, and REM sleep, which is thought to really improve sort of comprehension, seeing hidden patterns, the kind of thing we use in math. So that has some very clear ramifications. If you're going to truncate your sleep to study, prepare for something, well, if it's a foreign language, you want that first half of the night so you can wake up a little early. But the flip side is the better strategy if you are studying, for example, for a math test, okay, which is less about retention and more about comprehension and seeing hidden patterns. There, you want that morning sleep.
There are lots of strategies that you can use, data-driven, scientifically-driven strategies you can use to learn better. Context is huge, according to Benedict Carey. He's a science reporter for The New York Times and author of How We Learn, The Surprising Truth About When, Where, and Why It Happens. Benedict Carey, thanks for letting us learn from you.
Thanks, Todd.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.